the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. This summer marks the 40th anniversary of the papal declaration encyclical known as Humanae Vitae. It put the issue of birth control front and center for the Roman Catholic Church. I'm not a Roman Catholic, but we're going to be talking today about why the issue of birth control will not go away. We're also going to be talking about why many evangelicals, who by and large ignored the issue in 1968 when Humanae Vitae was released by the Vatican, now are very much a part of the conversation. We're going to be talking about that coming up on the Albert Mohler Program, 40 years of retrospect to the controversy over birth control. You can imagine that this is a raging controversy even now among many Roman Catholics, even as the Roman Catholic Church is standing by its teaching against artificial birth control. There were many evangelicals who considered this just to be a Catholic issue back in 1968 who were saying, well, you know, there's more to it than that. Maybe we also need to be looking at the issue of birth control. We're going to be talking about it today. I want to invite you to join the conversation right up front. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to be talking about how we, as intelligent Christians, seeking to have an intelligent Christian conversation, should think rightly about understanding the moral and theological challenges of birth control in general and of the development of the pill, very specifically. First, to review some issues in the news. Right now, there's ample news coverage on what is going on between the nations of Russia and Georgia over a territorial dispute that has now spilled over into open warfare. Interesting footnote to history here. This may be the first time that two democratically elected governments have gone to war against each other. Now you're hearing ominous things, such as Soviet tanks rolling across the border. There are those who are trying to characterize this also on an anniversary of 40 years ago, 1968, in Hungary, with the crackdown by the Soviet Union. There are those who are also trying to look at what this means in terms of the relationship not only between Russia and Georgia, but Russia and Europe and Russia and the United States. All of this also comes about as President George W. Bush is concluding his visit to China for the 2008 Summer Olympic Games. A lot going on the world stage, and when it comes to the issue in Georgia, it is, at least at this point, rather difficult to know exactly what is going on and what the end game might be. It is also difficult to know exactly where the fault lies in many of the controversial issues between Russia and Georgia, but it is clear at this point that Russia has pushed this far beyond what most people in the area and around the world would consider to be a legitimate military action, and is now openly involved in what it may amount to an invasion of the sovereign nation of Georgia, once that is a part of the Soviet Union. So there are a lot of issues going on here, a lot of shared history, a lot of animosity, a lot of ethnic and national rivalries. It's going to be very interesting to see how this comes about, but we must at this point be aware that an escalation in this conflict could be deadly for Europe and it could be deadly for the world, because it is conceivable that such a thing could become a superpower conflict in terms of relationships and words, if not more, and very quickly. Meanwhile, in Beijing, the 2008 Olympics are underway, and let's face it, yesterday was just a great day. When the men's relay team in swimming was able to get the gold medal and to win in such a spectacular victory, when you're talking about several hundredths of a second separating them from the number two team, which was France, it was a great moment. And it is a reminder of the fact that even as the declaration of the games of the Olympic Committee and the theme of the 2008 games is about all the world being one world, one dream, the reality is that there is also an incredible display of national loyalty when it comes to the athletic events, and I doubt there was a red-blooded American who wasn't thrilled to see the American men's swimming relay team win the gold, especially over against France, when France had been taunting the Americans about how the French were going to crush them. It was the second gold medal for Michael Phelps, who may be on his way for what would amount to a record-breaking 8 gold medals at a single Olympics. By the way, the Olympic medals themselves have a history. Time magazine is out with something which is very interesting, and that is that the ancient Greeks, of course, did not award medals. Instead, they gave laurel wreaths put upon the head of the victors. The medal tradition only goes back to 1896, where winners at the games in 1896 received silver, bronze, and non-existent medals. That is, first and second got a medal. There was no third place medal. The first place medal was silver. The second place medal was bronze. And the third place got nothing. Now, all three of the placements receive a medal. First, second, and third. The first is gold. The second is silver. And the third is bronze. However, the gold medal, guess what, really isn't gold. It's actually silver covered with a very thin 6 grams of 24 karat gold. By the way, the Summer Olympic medals feature Nike on the front. They are standardized, and on the back, they have something that is customized to the host city. The Winter Games, on the other two-year cycle of 4 years between the games, have no set form for medals. So just very interesting to look at that and to think about the fact that even as we're looking at this tradition that we all so well recognize of the platform and the athletes and, of course, the silver and the bronze and now the gold medal at the very top, it's hard to keep in mind sometimes that that is a fairly recent development. Speaking of recent developments, this is really big news. In California, a court reversed on Friday its previous ruling and decided that most forms of homeschooling are legal. Adele Banks, reporting for Religion News Service, indicated that the California Court of Appeal, which had ruled in a juvenile court case back in February that public school enrollment is generally required unless the child is tutored by a credentialed person or enrolled in a full-time private school, that court has now reversed itself and has determined that while original education laws seem to prohibit homeschools in the definition of a private school, later laws could be interpreted differently. From the court's decision I'm reading here, they said, and I quote, "The most logical interpretation of subsequent legislative enactments and regulatory provisions supports the conclusion that a homeschool can, in fact, fall within the private school exception to the general compulsory education law. We therefore conclude that homeschools may constitute private schools." End quote. This is a major victory. Back in February and March of this year, we were looking very carefully at this California appeals court decision because it really threatened the entire project of homeschool education. But more than that, not only when it came to homeschool education, it really threatened the rights of parents because the logic of the decision handed down by this California appeals court really treated children as mere wards of the state. In other words, it treated the state as the first and most important decision maker in the lives of children rather than parents. And even more than just the issue of homeschooling, as important as that is, the issue of parental authority loomed even larger. This reversal by this court is not unprecedented, but it is rare, and the rarity of it is at least partly explained in this case by the fact that there was so much public pressure brought against the court for this decision, including pressure from the governor's office, and for most people who are running for public office facing the outrage of parents concerned about this particular development. It has been impossible in recent days to watch the media without coming face-to-face over and over again with the filtering news reports and further revelations concerning former Senator John Edwards and his affair. On Friday, I made some comments about this. This isn't a partisan issue. Sin isn't a partisan issue. This is a human issue. But there are some further lessons to be learned here because as more and more of the details, rather salaciously and tragically, begin to leak out on this story, and as the media continues with its fascination, here is a parable being lived out before our eyes when it comes to Senator John Edwards, because what we now have is what we didn't have even Friday, and that is the graphic juxtaposition of some of his public statements over against the reality of what he now admits to have been going on. And if anything, this must be a reminder to us that when sin is revealed, Its sinfulness is very hard to deny. It seems like it is a downward spiral that is demonstrated again and again and again and again. there are those right now trying to figure out what the impact of this kind of scandal might be on the election. I really believe, as I said Friday, that it will be negligible. But if we are Christians about the task of intelligent Christian conversation, we need to turn that conversation not just to Senator John Edwards and his sin, but to the fact that when he speaks about it, he uses every word but sin, which in itself is an evasion that ought to capture our attention. We'll be back to talk about birth control, the controversy over it in 1968, the continuing controversy over the role of birth control within the lives, especially of Christian couples. To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. One of the questions that we get on this program most often, one of the issues of the greatest email traffic, has to do with birth control. And there are an awful lot of couples out there, churches, pastors, and others struggling with the issue of birth control. What is right? What is wrong? What is best? What is least to be recommended? Where are the concerns? This whole conversation is, in general, new for evangelicals, at least in an historical perspective. It's new for a couple of reasons. Number one, no one would have had this conversation before the early 1960s. Only with the advent of a reliable oral contraceptive in the early 1960s did this become an issue really of much concern or conversation. But even then, it really was treated by many evangelicals and Protestants as a Catholic issue. And that certainly was underlined in the minds of many when on July the 25th of 1968, so that's just a little more than 40 years ago, we're looking at the anniversary just in recent days, Pope Paul VI released his encyclical known as Humanae Vitae, which banned most forms of birth control. And, of course, that continues to be the official teaching, the infallible teaching as claimed by that church, of the Roman Catholic Magisterium, and it continues to be an issue of contention among Roman Catholics. When the Pope was recently here for his visit, you remember the press coverage, and one of the first things said about the Pope's visit to the United States is that the Pope is coming to the nation where there are over 50 million Roman Catholics, but the vast majority of them are openly in revolt against the teaching of the church on the issue of birth control. And the whole question of birth control is now very much a flashpoint in the Roman Catholic Church, not so much because people are deciding whether to use it or not. The vast majority of Catholics say that they do, but resentment about the teaching of the church and all the rest. When the anniversary of 30 years came about 10 years ago, I was invited by the journal First Things, one of the most important of the intellectual journals in this country, to participate in a symposium and to contribute an article on an evangelical perspective on the 40th anniversary of Humanae Vitae, and I did so, and it's been really interesting because I have received, not only then, but over the last 10 years, an enormous amount of response to that article, which is even now on the web, and evidently still read by a good many people. I began that article 10 years ago by saying that evangelicals are awakening to the fact that this isn't a Catholic issue. And even if many evangelicals are not going all the way over to the absolute ban on artificial birth control, that is the official teaching of the Roman Catholic Church, there are an awful lot of younger evangelicals who are asking questions, pressing questions, that their parents and grandparents really never even thought about. I think that in itself is a good development. Just today I was interviewed for a film documentary here on the 40th anniversary of Humanae Vitae, and I was asked about evangelicals and the pill. And one of the interesting questions I got in the midst of this documentary interview was, what do I think really stand out as the great issues of the effect or impact of the pill on the family? And, you know, that's pretty easy to come to. Number one, we have the first big development is that children are now considered to be a positive choice rather than just what comes naturally in the course of the marriage relationship. In other words, the vast majority of American couples think of their reproductive capacity, the procreative gift, as something like a faucet, which can now be turned off and on, and the assumption is that it's turned off unless you decide you want to turn it on. That is a revolution in human consciousness. Another development of all this, of course, just has to do, obviously, with family size. The pill has allowed for a reduction in family size, and you've certainly seen this. And now that human beings have this kind of control over reproductive capacity, it turns out that human beings decide to have fewer children. For whatever reason, we talked about that before on this program, than previous generations. A third new development out of all of this has been the fact that women are delaying pregnancy to later ages. So you have the sociological phenomenon, which filters down into the very real lives and experience of children and their parents, of the fact that many mothers are entering the workforce and are using contraceptives in order to delay children until such time they think it's right or for them or advantageous for them to have children. And so women who otherwise would have been having children in their early and mid-20s are now having them in their late 30s and early 40s, and that's a big change. But I had to come back and say that I think the biggest change brought by the pill has been not so much just in the family, but in the whole arena of sexuality, because the pill allows for extramarital or non-marital sex without what had been the consequences in previous generations. Illicit affairs, premarital sex, all of these things implied the potential of a pregnancy that now is pharmacologically preventable. An awful lot of evangelicals are looking at this whole thing and saying, you know, we're not sure that this is right. Then there are some complicating factors that come along. Debate over a potential abortifacient effect of the oral contraceptives. All kinds of things are factoring into the decision-making of a lot of evangelical couples. This is an intelligent Christian conversation. It's also today, let's face it, an adult Christian conversation. Not explicit, but fundamentally dealing with the issue of birth control. I want to hear from you. I want to know what you think are the big issues. I want to know if this is something that is being discussed in your circles. I guarantee you I'm surrounded by a lot of younger Christians and younger Christian couples, and they are thinking about this. They are very intensely struggling with this question. Just think about the Roman Catholic Church's position, and let's summarize what that is. It is that the use of artificial birth control is illegitimate because each and every act of sexual intercourse must be equally open to the gift of children. Now, my argument is that it's not each and every marital act, it's each and every marital relationship that should be open to the gift of children. So I'm not saying that Christians should never use birth control. I have serious concerns about it, but I'm not saying that based upon Christian moral reasoning, a Christian couple can never use birth control. I am saying that the default position for the Christian should be that we accept that children are God's good gift, and we would use any kind of birth control technology or product only because we believe that it is advantageous and advisable under certain circumstances. Limiting the number of children, I'm not rejecting that as a legitimate concern. But the idea that we would use birth control as a way of avoiding what is inherent in the gift of marriage, and that is procreation, is something that I think should be a matter that would trouble the Christian conscience significantly. The phone number to join this conversation is 877-893-8255. If you are a pastor, a counselor, a youth minister, a college minister, how do you counsel people on this? If you're a Christian, perhaps a Christian couple in conversation with other Christian couples, is this being discussed where you are? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. As always, you can go to the website at albertmuller.com. Send me a word about what you're thinking, and we'll try to get your emails and messages on the air as well. The whole question of birth control. Well, a lot of people thought it would go away. When you had the development of the pill early in the 1960s, you had its widespread use. Certainly by the end of that decade, there were a lot of people who thought that the use of the pill and the whole question of birth control would become so much a part of the normal landscape that it wouldn't be a part of our ongoing conversation. And yet, you know, that isn't how it worked out. I think for good reason. I'm thankful that a good number of evangelicals are awakening to the question, beginning to wonder, is there a dimension of marriage, of sexuality, of God's gift here that we are ignoring or perhaps maligning or failing to receive as a gift? The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The issue is birth control. The occasion is the 40th anniversary of Humanae Vitae, which is the official teaching, the encyclical of the Roman Catholic Church, handed down back then in 1968 by Pope Paul VI, which included an absolute ban on artificial birth control. The reality is the vast majority of Roman Catholics in the United States say by their own words that they're ignoring that, even as an increasing number of evangelicals are beginning to rethink the question. Now, there is a spectrum, of course, of responses to this. There are some people who would say, I believe that the teaching of the Roman Catholic Church is actually right on this. Absolutely no birth control whatsoever, at least artificial birth control under any circumstances. There are still some evangelicals who would say, look, I don't think it's a big moral issue. I think those evangelicals are wrong, but they are there. And in between, there's a pretty big spectrum of people trying to figure these things out. I am not in a position where I am in total agreement with the teaching of the Roman Catholic Church, because I am operating from a different framework of moral reasoning than the pure natural law reasoning there of the Roman Catholic Church. However, I think that their argument is more right than wrong. Certainly when it comes to procreation being an essential part of the gift of marriage and openness to children being a necessity of the legitimate use and reception of the gift of marriage. From Louisville, Kentucky, Daniel's listening on WFIA. Daniel, what do you think?
Well, I kind of agree with you. It is a big concern, I believe, that all Protestants should take into consideration. My wife and I just recently removed her from the pill, where she had been suffering from physical issues with the pill, but we had discussed, you know, is it appropriate or not for our new marriage, and we've come to a decision that ultimately it's going to be in God's hands, whether we have a child or not, by human manners or not. So there are advantages, though, just taking the pill that I've seen through some of my friends, though.
Yeah, Daniel, let me just ask you a point-blank question so that I understand here. If you're willing to talk about this, on the air, does that mean that you're using no artificial form of birth control, or just that you've decided not to use the pill?
We're using no forms of child, what you were saying.
Birth control, contraception, yeah.
Birth control,
okay.
There we go, sorry.
Well, I think what you can expect out of that is that you will soon be known as Daddy, and that's wonderful. That's wonderful. But if you have two healthy young people, and they are married involved actively in marriage, then you're likely very quickly to become parents. And I want to look at Daniel's reasoning for just a moment. Daniel, I really respect your call. I respect your role as a husband and helping to think this through for your wife and yourself as a couple. I especially appreciate your openness to the gift of children. Daniel said one thing, and as a theologian, I want to think about this for just a moment. He said, "If God decides we'll have children, we will," and that's absolutely true, by the way. You can count on that. I do want to suggest that we have to be very careful about basing our argument on what is classically defined as a medical non-interventionism, which means that we would never intervene in a physiological or in a medical situation, because if God wants this to happen or that to happen, it will happen. Obviously, we don't do that, and we don't counsel fellow Christians to do that when it comes to the use of antibiotics or a surgery to intervene for a problem. So I would suggest that we don't base our argument on a principle of non-interventionism, but because if we really wanted to follow that principle consistently, then we wouldn't take medicine, we wouldn't take an aspirin, we wouldn't have open-heart surgery. But there is something to that argument that resonates with us, because we know that when we're talking about reproduction, you're talking about a healthy human process. It's not a disease. I mean, that's one of the problems of the pill. It kind of treats children as a disease that you can get vaccinated against. So even as we don't want to base our argument entirely on that principle, we do understand that there is something to it as well. Even as we're not non-interventionists, we do understand that in the case of reproduction, it's not something going wrong with the system. It's all the system working as it's supposed to work. We've got other callers on the line, and right after this break, we're going to continue this conversation. I want to invite you to call as well. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I am encouraged by how many younger couples and younger Christians I see talking about this. I can hardly go to a church or to a college or university campus and talk to younger people without this being a constant question. I've written several articles on this and participated in book projects, and because of that, people have felt very free to ask questions and to send their own testimonies and really the recollection of how they have thought through the issue or are thinking through the issue. I think it's a great gain when evangelicals say, you know, this really is a morally significant question. Even if previous generations saw this as somebody else's issue, no, it's really our issue as well. We have to think it through in a way that is distinctively Christian and distinctively biblical. The phone number is 877-893-8255, and we'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The 40th anniversary of the papal encyclical on birth control, Humanae Vitae, was just a few days ago. We're talking today about how we as evangelical Christians, really trying to struggle with this issue, are thinking now about it, realizing it's not just a Catholic issue. And even as many evangelicals are not moving to what is the classic Catholic position on this, based in natural theology and natural law, there is a new scriptural reasoning just about what marriage means that is the fundamental basis of this. And I think it's also coming after now 4 decades of looking at the experience of widespread birth control and seeing that it's had some intended and some unintended consequences, both in terms of family life and the larger society. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. We're going to get to as many calls as possible. First, to Mifflintown, Pennsylvania, Judy's on the line. Go ahead, Judy.
Hi. Well, this is kind of complex, so I'll say it all real quick if I can, and then, you know, if there's something I'm not saying clear, let me know. But birth control is neither Christian nor unchristian. It's the use of proper use of sex that is either Christian or unchristian. And the confusion comes from trying to say that either sex is for procreation or recreation. It's neither of those. Those are both wonderful, blessed side effects. But the purpose of sex is to join a man and a woman into one flesh, and that's scriptural, and it's in more than one place, that the actual sexual act joins them and makes them one and creates that unity. If you're not using birth control, it can cause a great deal of stress if the thought of a pregnancy would be really too stressful for whatever reasons it might be, whether it's health or financial or whatever it might be. And if it keeps a husband and wife from enjoying the gift of sex, then to not use birth control. If, on the other hand, you're using it causes you to fall into sin, then it is a sin. So, you know, each couple needs to prayerfully decide God's will for them.
Judy, you got an amazing amount of material there in a very succinct number of words, which I really appreciate. And I think you had a lot of profound wisdom in what you were saying there. First of all, it is the unitive function of marriage that does lead us immediately to the gift of sex. So you're exactly right. And that's why it's classically called the conjugal act, because it is bringing the two together in a one-flesh relationship. A one-flesh relationship, by the way, that has a salvation history. In terms of its meaning, where it's pointed to the relationship even between Christ and the church. It's the bride and the bridegroom metaphor, which isn't sexual. That does not point to sex. Rather, that sex points to the one thing which is even greater, and that's the total unity that comes through Christ. However, when you're looking at the whole question, you raise the issue. A lot of people juxtapose whether sex is for pleasure or procreation. It's basically for both. And, you know, the reality is, and I'm just going to speak very candidly here, and I'm going to warn you ahead of time, I'm going to speak not explicitly, but candidly, so here comes the candid part. Neither the procreation nor the pleasure is always the same in a marital relationship. It just doesn't work out that way. There is more and less openness to both of those at different times in a married couple's relationship. But that's why marriage is the union of a man and a woman for a lifetime. It's not just hooking up somewhere. That's a part of the teaching of marriage, of what it takes to be committed to each other and to stay with each other. But I would argue that it isn't each and every act within the marriage that has to be open to the gift of children, but the marriage itself that has to be open to the gift of children. And I really appreciate your call, Judy. Very, very thoughtful. A lot there for us to think about. Let's go to Oregon, where April's on the line. Go ahead, April.
Hello, this is April. And I, my husband and I are a young couple who struggled with this same decision early on in our marriage. And we came to the decision that for us, popular methods of birth control were not the thing to do. But in many of the circles we run in, all of our friends, a lot of them are in the same boat. We are looking at the same issue. And although many of them have sided on the same way as we have, I know a lot of the other ones are in a big boat. They're in a dilemma that none of our ancestors have had to be in. Our parents didn't have to be in. Our grandparents didn't have to be in. We have to look at, we're struggling with our family size, our health. We know we could use birth control, but then we have our conscience that's saying, is it right? Is it right? Is it right? And so I think that's just one of the things we have to face. Thankfully, my husband and I aren't having to face that at this time. We're going to have many kids. But
yeah, so. I'm sorry, April. I'm sorry to have to jump in on you here just for the sake of time. But I appreciate the fact that you're talking about how important it is that a Christian couple think through this seriously. And, even as you and your husband might reach different conclusions to that question at different times, and you indicated some different couples coming to different conclusions about exactly how they're going to handle this, you know, let me tell you, April, it's a great gain for evangelical Christians to be having this conversation, because in previous generations, it was largely just ignored. And I just want to thank you, even as we're running out of time here, I want to thank you for contributing to this, even by demonstrating the fact that it isn't always easy to think through these things. But many of the most important questions of life aren't easy. Discipleship isn't easy, but we are called to be faithful nonetheless as we try to think and pray these issues through together. Let's go to Laurie coming from Salem, Oregon. Go ahead, Laurie.
Yes, my husband and I used birth control, and the reason was because I was finished with my education and he was not, and so I worked while he went to school. So it was for our education and for financial reasons, and then when he graduated, I went off the pill and we began having our family.
And that makes total sense to me.
Yeah, makes sense to us, too.
Yeah, in other words, I think just given your circumstances there, let me tell you what I hear that encourages me, Laurie. First of all, you're assuming that your marriage is open to the gift of children. And so that's the big hurdle, I think, for me right there. So it wasn't a question of whether you were just going to try to be married and enjoy the gift of sex without children. You were looking forward to children. And I do think there are some issues about timing and opportunity and even limitations upon the number of children. I have young couples say to me, we're going to have as many children as the Lord gives us. Well, if you're young and healthy, you're looking at a whole lot of children. And I find that, well, after about five or six, usually, maybe a few more, no one I know has continued that all the way. That's a pretty hard line to take all the way. Or you end up limiting them by other means. That is just failing to have the marital act as a way of limiting births. Not something I recommend either in that case for birth control. So, and when I say, Laurie, you know, what you say there I think makes a lot of sense. And I think different Christian couples would come to different conclusions about how basically to do that. But I think you and your husband were thinking seriously about it. And I appreciate your willingness to share that with us. Back with final thoughts. I'm Albert Moeller. Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. I knew this was going to be an interesting conversation, and of course it turned out that way. And we heard a range of responses, but I think what unifies them all is that you had people who were thinking seriously about this. And if there's nothing else gained by this conversation today, maybe it'll prompt some serious talk, thought, and reflection on the whole question of birth control among some Christians who may not have thought about it before. Here are some related questions you really need to look at. And I always need to make clear when we talk about an issue like this, I am not a medical doctor. I'm not a pharmacist. I'm not practicing medicine. I'm not talking about or talking as an expert in medicine. I'm talking as a theologian and pastor, just trying to think these things through from a theological and biblical perspective. I do have concerns about the pill related to a potential abortive fashion effect. That's what I did the interview today with the documentary maker. I have written about that. You can find the materials that I have written and perhaps some links to other places you'll find helpful. If you just go to albertmuller.com, you can just look at the search feature, put in birth control or contraception, and it should come up. When it comes to giving advice, you know, the first issue for me is always openness to the gift of marriage. To the gift of children. I think the gift of marriage comes with openness to the gift of children. The expectation that, certainly if you're marrying in the reproductive age, not talking about here people in advanced age who are getting married, but if you're getting married as most couples do during the time of normal fertility, the expectation should be that the couple will be open to the gift of children. Now, given issues of timing, of even limiting family size and other things, well, 40 years ago, the Roman Catholic Church said those are illegitimate issues, period. I don't believe that they're illegitimate issues. And I'm not suggesting that a Christian couple can never, in good conscience, use any form of birth control. But I am suggesting that we need to think carefully that the default position should be that children are gifts to be received as that, as gifts. That we would stay away from any form of birth control that would have an abortifacient effect. And this means, at least suspect in my mind, is anything that might have a potential abortifacient effect. And instead, we would look very carefully and prayerfully at using mostly barrier methods of contraception, something that is legitimately a contraception that is taking place. Because let's remember that we're using the word contraception to mean something that prevents conception, not that prevents the successful implantation of a fertilized ovum within the uterine wall. Well, this conversation's been a bit more candid than most we have on this program, dealing with an issue of sensitivity, but that really makes the point. This is a conversation that isn't easy, but it's a conversation that Christians really need to have. I want to encourage pastors, Christian leaders, Christian couples, start this conversation in your local church where you can think and study, reflect and pray about these things together. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmuller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmuller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.